Welcome back to the Workspace Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Moran. Today is a good one. Nabil Aidoud of Insurance Menu was our guest. He's actually a member here at Workspace 45 in Canton. We had a great discussion. Nabil has an awesome background. He's part of a startup. He's actually the CEO and president of Insurance Menu. I think you're really going to enjoy the insights, so have a listen. Nabil, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Was really excited when you agreed to come on the podcast today. First and foremost, you're the first man that we've had.
I pride myself on being a trailblazer.
There you go. So let's just get started with a little background on yourself and your professional background, and then we can just get to it.
Awesome. I'm from Boston. I grew up in Boston, and I went to Boston University for my undergrad. And right out of college in the late 90s, consulting was really hot. I ended up taking my first job was with IBM Global Services. That was early enough where the industry was developing and formalizing itself. And so I ended up staying with IBM for 10 years. And it was a great experience. I learned a ton about how big companies make decisions.
I bet.
And I got to travel. So I got a chance to work all over the world, from Asia to the Middle East to Europe, on these long stints.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really fun.
So you weren't stuck in Cleveland for weeks on end?
No, never in Cleveland, but definitely...
There's anything wrong with Cleveland.
Oh, you know, the Cavaliers are the evil empire for
a while,
right?
Yeah, they've been tough to us.
It was a great experience and had a chance to work with all sorts of different types of companies, everything from like a global consumer electronics behemoth like Samsung and helping them design their entire procurement organization.
Okay.
Which you wouldn't necessarily think that IBM does stuff like that, but they do a lot of just pure strategy consulting. To probably one of my coolest projects was with the National Football League. And that was part of a sponsorship campaign that IBM would spend a certain amount of money to have the NFL use certain products and services that IBM offers. And then there's an ad campaign that is done during the Super Bowl. So
okay.
I'm proud to say that my project was featured in the Super Bowl that the Patriots, when they beat the Philadelphia Eagles.
Okay.
So that was a fun project.
Cool.
So that was 10 years. And then after that, I kind of said, you know what? Where's the future for me? Do I really want to be an entrepreneur, or do I want to just continue down sort of this path of going down the partner track, basically?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I decided to take a leap of faith and go out on my own. And I met my business partner, my current business partner back then, and it has been a journey. We've tried a number of different things, and the current venture, Insurance Menu, which is a digital distribution platform for the insurance industry, as the name would suggest, we've been working on that now for 3 years.
All right. Let's jump back to Insurance Menu in a few minutes, but first I want to focus in on an analogy that kind of sparked our discussion a couple weeks ago when we first discussed perhaps you being a guest on the podcast here. And that was an analogy between a company that's getting a lot of attention these days, not for what they sell online, but for what they do to business, for businesses, that being Amazon Web Services. So you've got an interesting analogy between Amazon Web Services and our community here. So let's just dive into that a little
bit. Sure. So I think it's part of a wider trend. So I'm in the tech community, right? And the trend is you've got these like fast-moving, nimble startups that are going out there, they're pushing hard into the marketplace and solving problems. The capital environment is designed to support that, the way that teams are being formed. I mean, every aspect of the future of the economy is leaning more towards these sort of what I call fast-moving tiger team type companies going out there trying to solve a very specific problem for the, you know, the larger industry, right? So that means that you can only be good at a few things. And what happens is when you're thinking about solving a problem and building a company around that solution, you don't have the bandwidth or the resources to think about things that are not critical to you. Hmm. So one of the most obvious things that just takes up mind share is where you work. You know, having an office space where you can quickly set up and where your team can be comfortable, but you can also be productive without a lot of the typical, you know, constraints that come with a standard, you know, 7-year lease with all sorts of hoops that you have to go through.
Right.
Right. That mentality is, you're seeing it across the board. So everything, you know, software as a service is a big trend, right?
Mm-hmm.
The cloud infrastructure hosting analogy to me is the same exact thing, right? So before, like in the early, you know, 2000, late 90s, when you were going to be a .com, you had to go and raise like $30 million because you had to build your own server farm.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a huge hurdle. it's an extreme example of that, you know, when you're comparing it to a co-working space, but it's the same exact principle.
Right.
Nowadays, in a span of 5-10 minutes, you could be set up on Amazon Web Services. The way that they're set up, the breadth of their offering lets you take managing infrastructure and hosting, take that off your plate, and you can be exclusively focused on application development, you know, or maybe service development specific to a unique problem. It's just a more efficient way to allocate resources.
Let's drill down on that sort of micro focus application that I have my head in the sand. I'm trying to run a business. I'm trying to create this community. I'm unaware of this sort of hyper focus that you speak of. So let's just dive into that a little bit more. So you're saying that instead of trying to be the end all be all for an insurance company, there are teams out there focusing in on very specific applications. How does a company like that or an idea like that get any traction at the likes of Allstate, if you will?
Sure, sure. There's a lot of different ways, a lot of different paths to success, okay, right? I mean, let me answer that in two parts. So the first part is an Allstate, or actually a big company right now, they used to do everything in-house. That was the trend back in like the 70s, the 80s. You know, it was just always in-house R&D. But if you look across the U.S. economy, R&D spending has just come down. It's plummeted, right?
Or they'd hire IBM and outsource the whole thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But even then, it was still very large. You had to mobilize large parts of your organization internally, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the last 10 to 15 years, everything's gone out of their own sort of house. And people are really trying to figure out, how do I let a team of people, I don't have to pay their salary, I don't have to pay their benefits, let them try to come up with a good solution for us, a point solution for something, a unique business challenge that we have. And if it's good, then I'll either use their service, you know, on a monthly basis. If a better service comes along, I'll just can them and just go to somebody else's service.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they're really good, I'll just buy them out. That's really what's happening on a wider scale. So a large company now could be working with one company for their chat service, another company for their marketing and lead gen campaign, another company for their quoting and enrollment platform like ours. That's what we do. We do quoting and enrollment for different products like dental and health insurance, right? And that's much more nimble and flexible than having to build an in-house IT team to be able to support all those things. It just costs a fraction of the cost, and the net result is that you're moving faster in the marketplace.
Are these business leaders making these kinds of decisions that they want to outsource that function, or is it more of an IT function, if you will?
So usually in-house IT is not thrilled with this trend.
I would think not.
Yeah, they're like
sounds like someone's losing their job in some cases.
I mean, that's probably how it gets communicated or people gripe about it. But the truth is the labor market is so tight, nobody's losing their job. If anybody's telling you that, you know, this is jobs are leaving the company because of this, I would say it's probably because the person just wasn't good, right?
Okay.
And they were probably an impediment to progress. The reality is in-house IT should be focusing on the core critical applications. Like everything that I just described to you, these are all peripheral applications. And by the way, when I say application, I just mean like, you know, a business function, right? Yeah. Like being able to do customer support through chat. You know, I'm referring to that as an application.
Okay.
But really, it just means like this is a business function. Whether or not IBM can do chat support for customer service reps, whether they do that in-house or they use somebody else's tool, it's not going to change how IBM is in the marketplace.
Yeah.
Right? So really, you got to think about core and non-core business applications and functions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not core and you don't need to own it, then all you're doing is just adding noise to your internal organization. And if you think about how the U.S. market is evolving, it's become so hyper-competitive. To be, you're only as good as your last quarter. Now you're only as good as your last month. So just, you got to get the noise out. It's not just for the small companies that don't want to manage office space like ours right now.
Yeah.
It's also for the big companies as well, too. I'm going to go back to another question you just asked, which is like, how do you get into that space, right? There's a lot of different ways to do it. I mean, you know, there's a model like ours where we participated in an accelerator, which is these sort of structured programs that take all of these young companies. They put them through like a 3-month boot camp. They pair them up with a lot of big companies that are looking to get exposed to innovators. And then the output of that is a funding cycle as well as a preliminary batch of early customers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's one path. Another path is you've got somebody from the industry, so somebody who is a 20-year insurance executive. They see all the opportunities to become a service provider to their own industry. They go out, either they put up the money themselves or they go and get institutional funding from a venture capitalist. They create the company and then they just use their own old Rolodex to sell in-house. Mm-hmm. And then the third one that everybody's enamored with is you got a bunch of hackers in a college dorm, you know, who just invent something amazing while doing shots of vodka.
Yeah, the dream.
Yeah. And then, you know, they just kind of hit the enter button and the next day they wake up and they're billionaires.
Right.
That's what everybody wants to hear.
Someone makes a movie about them.
Yeah, somebody makes a movie about it and then we all spend a lot of time on their website, right? And their predominant colors are blue. But yeah. But the truth is that is so the exception to the rule.
Yeah.
Most overnight successes are 10 years old.
Okay. The thing that's rolling around my head right now is roll up. I mean, if this is the trend now, what might be the next trend? I would think that someone's out there trying to identify all these discrete applications and perhaps rolling them up into a company that provides a broader set of services or skills to whether it be insurance or banking or CPGs or whomever. Do you see that happening today?
Well, let me check the crystal ball. I'll tell you real quickly. No, just kidding. It's interesting that you say that. I don't know if I would use the roll-up analogy. But I will say that there's definitely different schools of thought. So I like The Economist. I love the way that they cover the business sector. Uh-huh. And they have been on this for the last 6 months, maybe a year or so, where they've been talking about, they call them the FANGs, which is like, you know, Facebook, Apple, Netflix, right? Google. And these companies are just buying up everybody who is doing anything interesting. They're buying them up, right? And they believe that they're effectively the new world order of monopolies that could potentially stymie, you know, innovation and competition, right? So that's something that I've been reading about in the past.
Okay.
I don't know that I necessarily subscribe to that. I really am a staunch believer in how competitive the U.S. market is. And so regardless of industry, if it makes sense, it'll take a couple of years, but if it makes sense, there'll always be new entrants and competitors are going to push the envelope forward. So yes, there are probably a lot of what I call portfolio companies that go out there and just buy everything that they think might be useful for them because they've got the cash.
Yeah.
But there's nothing to guarantee that they're always going to have the cash, right? So it's kind of hard to envision a world where Google isn't so dominant.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't necessarily believe that it's guaranteed they'll always be dominant. So the philosophy that I think more about is you can only be good at a few things, and this really applies to almost all companies. You know, so really what will end up happening is that companies will get better at sticking to what they're good at and then outsourcing what they're not good at. This idea of disintermediating non-core functions, I think, is really where I see things going. And that might be mean like that's a big company that's good at maybe a few handful of really big things or a bunch of smaller companies. But at the end of the day, people are going to get better at certain things. And ultimately, the way that different companies work together will continue to improve. For example, as technology, as standards get more standardized, basically, it's going to be easier for companies to work well together. So it's only going to accelerate that shift, and consumer will benefit from that.
And I think the economy is sort of supporting this whole gig economy, if you will. I mean, there's so much infrastructure in place, you know, never mind real estate, which is kind of where I play, but there's so many other things that are supporting small groups being able to, as we say, hyper-focus on specific things. Maybe there won't be much motivation to do a big roll-up unless they're really looking for some sort of exit strategy. Who knows?
Yeah, I think it's just really hard to do. And when you think about how big the U.S. economy is, you know, I think real estate is a great example of how hard it is to consolidate in certain sectors.
Mm.
At the end of the day, real estate is a local business.
It is.
Our decision to come here was predicated on so many variables. You know, obviously price point was part of it, but the truth is there was all these other intangibles that were important to me. So for example, my commute, the size of the offices, the amenities, right? These are all little things that were part of it.
Yeah.
It's dictated by where I live and the traffic patterns, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's so hard for a large company to consolidate that. Now, technology is a little different. You know, with technology, it's just a collection of IP addresses and you can pretty much play in the entire world, right?
Yeah.
But that's only technology. I think that there's still so many industries where the trend is going to be in the other direction where it's going to be hyper-local customization, really variable pricing models based on people's needs. Oh, you know what? I've got a great example for you. All right. I just bought a ticket. And I bought a ticket to, I have to go to Paris for 3 days because I have a relative who's not doing well.
Oh, that's too bad.
And, well, it's my 97-year-old grandmother, so good job. You know, chapeau, as they would say.
Seriously,
she,
yeah.
Yeah, she did everything right. And I was like, oh, man, I don't want to pay for these really expensive transatlantic flights. And then I discovered this airline, and I hate flying. I told you, I did 10 years of consulting, which means I flew a lot.
Yeah.
I hate the smell of airplanes.
Yeah, I'm so, done. I did it myself. Yeah. I
hate flying.
Yeah.
But I found this airline called Primera. It was awesome. It allowed me to customize my ticket to like the nth degree. It was amazing, right? So, and it's smart. The way that their business model is, they will come up on the Google search engines or the flight comparative raters.
Kayak. Yeah.
And they'll go there with like just a price point that nobody will ever use, but still they'll come up at the top of the search results. So my ticket to Paris was $360 or $340.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. On short notice. So 360, but it is bare bones. For example, I don't even have access to overhead space, but I was able to go through the entire thing and say, you know what? I don't need the overhead space. I'll just wear the same clothes for 2 days. I don't care. But I want to upgrade to an exit row. And I was able to just mix and match all the different, all these little things that we used to buy as a bundled service in our airfare.
Yeah.
I was able to mix and match it to get the right balance of price point and comfort. So I sacrificed a few things, but I got what was really important to me. So that's a great example of like hyper-local sort of customization that I think you're going to see certain industries do.
Yeah.
And these guys, from what I understood, I mean, I did Google them to make sure that they were, at least they had FAA compliance, right?
Right.
If not, I can't pay my rent. But what was good was that they are very specific about the routes that they fly. They are cheap transatlantic flights.
Mm.
I think you'll see more industries like that. And it'll be really hard for a large company to just roll that up because they have all this overhead.
Yeah. And Google is really recognizing that too. I met with a Google engineer just by chance, and he said that they're so much more focused on local business coming up better in the search results based on a whole number of other factors other than like the traditional SEO metrics.
That is the segment that we're focused on in Insurance Menu. Insurance Menu is 100% just all we care about is small businesses that have less than 50 employees because historically, the technology and the insurance industry has not really focused on this market segment.
Huh.
But there's 50 million people that are employed by small businesses.
So that great segue. Let's get back to Insurance Menu, kind of see where you guys are today, where you're going, some of the challenges you've encountered. Let's just take a few minutes to talk through that.
Sure. We're a digital distribution platform. So if you think about, and the space that we're in is an employee benefit. So in this country, most people get their benefits from an employer. I know that the Obamacare debacle was on the news all the time, but the truth is the number of people who go out and buy their own health insurance on the individual market, it's a fraction. It's like, I think 10 million people out of 300 million people in this country.
Wow. I'm one of them. It's painful. Trust me.
It is painful, right? And that's why most people want it from their employer, right?
Yeah, right.
They want to push that onto their employer. And employers have to do it because it's their way of retaining talent. So what we want to focus on is taking the really antiquated way that small businesses buy and select benefits, which typically is pieces of paper, like stacks of paper and Excel spreadsheets that are inaccurate and very different paths to purchase, right? And we want to move all that onto one platform, one menu of options that an employer can use if they work with independent agent, which is the predominant sales channel in this space.
Yep.
They can collaborate on this. And for all the insurance carriers that sell to that market, they've got a consistent, tech-enabled, efficient way to not only display their products, have both parties quickly figure out what it'll cost them based on how big the company is, how old people are, so on and so forth. And then when people are ready to buy, with a few clicks, all the enrollment data gets funneled through Insurance Menu, and we send it off to the different carriers. Because a typical benefits package is not just one insurance company, it's three or four, dental, vision, medical, disability, life. I mean, oftentimes it'll be 3 or 4 different insurance companies where you have to route the information to.
Huh. Okay.
So it's a perfect play for technology.
All right. I want to say I use something similar. Oh, HSA.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the difference between what they're doing, what you're doing? They're a broker.
Yes, exactly. That's the big difference.
That's the big difference. Okay.
That's the big difference. So shockingly, the Massachusetts market is very unique. It's not typical like the rest of the country. But HSA is a broker, but they've got a tech platform as well, and they've got a couple of deals with some of the local medical carriers. Our strategy is a little bit different than theirs in the sense that they're exclusively focused on medical insurance. We're focusing on medical along with all the other lines as well too.
Okay.
And the way that we're going to market is we're thinking more on a national scale, whereas they are more locally focused.
Yes.
That being said, HSA has been around for a long time. At least the last I checked, they were owned by a pretty large brokerage that is also a national player.
Okay.
We're trying to be a little bit more agnostic and work more closely with the carriers.
Okay. So ultimately, your end customers are going to be small business owners, or are the carriers your customers, or are the customers your... Okay.
Yep, the carriers.
The carriers are... Okay. Yeah.
And when we say carriers, sometimes like I have to like chill with the vernacular. The carriers, insurance companies. So the insurance companies, aka carriers, they are my customer. And then what I try to do is I make it easier for them to do business with their customers, which is the small businesses.
Okay. And they're afraid or not afraid of you offering 10 different carriers?
Ah, that's the million-dollar question.
Okay.
That comes up in every single one of my sales meetings.
All right. So how do you get around it?
Well, it depends on if you're an early customer or not. So in certain markets, for example, in Iowa and a couple of other markets, because I have awesome early customers that are not only giving us revenue, but they're also helping us really refine our business model. They're like what I call true partners. For them, I won't let competitor products in their respective markets. So that's my carrot to early customers. Down the road, I think that the value I will create will be justified to have a little bit of breadth and options to the end consumer.
Yeah.
That being said, I don't envision in our future ever where our goal is to have every single option out there, provide a true sort of like
marketplace.
Now, marketplace is a fancy way of saying, let's just have a race to the bottom in terms of price.
Yeah, right.
Right? Marketplace, it sounds like,
it doesn't do anybody any good.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it has to do with if people need to put in a claim, the company that's sort of owning that claim, they need to be able to pay their employees so they can provide good service.
Mm.
So there is a service to price trade-off that we hope we can affect. So we don't necessarily believe we'll work with every single company out there. We'll work with the best brands, the most reputable brands. We'll provide them with the value and the market access to justify being on our platform. But as far as the competition online, that'll be specific to the market. But at the end of the day, it's happening today, right?
Yeah.
So right now, you're not being compared online. But guess what? When agents go into a business's front door, you're on a spreadsheet. And that's the term in the industry. You're being spreadsheeted.
Huh. Okay.
So if that's the reality, you're not really doing yourself any favor by limiting what we do. Because at the end of the day, we provide a better end user experience. And I think that's what people want right now. Nobody thinks about, my benefits purchasing process was just an amazing end user experience.
Right.
It was so great. I can't wait to buy my benefits next year.
Right. So how did you identify these sort of acute pain points that people sort of go through when they're buying their benefits or reevaluating? Was it a gig you were on? How did it come about?
There's a saying, it says half of life is just showing up.
And yeah.
To bring it back to my IBM days, when Mason and I said, yeah, man, we really hate working for other people. Let's just become entrepreneurs. Problem was we didn't have an idea. So we tried all these different ideas. We would pitch each other ideas. Could we do a business like this? Could we do a business like that? So our first foray was into population health, which is a fancy way of saying wellness for large groups, very large populations.
Mm.
There was an initiative in Massachusetts to provide a 5% discount on health insurance to small businesses if they did a wellness program. And we had a tech solution for that. So we said, hey, great. We don't really know what the end game will be, but this is a potential use case for this platform that we built. that was where we first learned it. Well, eventually we figured out that it's really hard to monetize wellness.
Yeah.
But we got exposed to the market, to these pain points, and then so we just adjusted. So we shut down that operation, and then we created Insurance Menu.
So where are you guys today? Number of employees? Can you talk about customers? Or
Yeah. So we've got, I'll start with the customers. So we work with a big agency based out of Maine, but you'll see them everywhere here throughout New England. They're called Cross Insurance.
Oh, sure.
So if you go to the Red Sox game, you'll see them. They were our first customer.
Okay.
So I really love these guys because small businesses is their bread and butter, and they're really open to trying out new things.
Yeah, so they took a flyer on you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We work with Northeast Delta Dental, which is the Delta Dental company up in New Hampshire, but they handle all of the northern New England market. Delta Dental of Iowa is another customer. I've got a few more companies that we'll probably announce early next year.
Yeah.
But you're seeing that it's a blend of large progressive insurance agencies plus insurance companies that want to be at the forefront of digital distribution. As far as the team, we are five now, with four people here in the country. And then we just brought on our first overseas employee about 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
So that's a bit of a learning curve for us, is figuring out how to work with an offshore resource. And this could be another podcast where just the trend of offshore resources being used for just projects to now staff augmentation. And what we're doing is we're going to build out our team, but they'll be part of our team. They'll just happen to live in another country.
What was the motivation there, hiring that first one? Is it almost like an experiment, or what was the motivation?
There's two things. The most obvious one is cost.
Okay.
I mean, the cost for technical help in this country is just mind-boggling. I mean, there's been such inflation of salaries for technical people, not because they don't deserve it. I mean, hey, if your skill set is in short demand, you should command the premium, right?
Yeah.
But we don't need rocket scientists, you know, data scientists. I mean, we just need people to build software applications. So the core product team is here in the U.S., but then we're going to augment our staff overseas. So that it was cost.
Yeah.
And then the other one is getting people. There's just nobody to hire.
Competitive, yeah.
I mean, if you are somebody who studied computer engineering coming out of school, you're going to be offered jobs that are north of $100,000 a year.
Wow.
Coming out of school, undergrad.
That's crazy.
Yeah. You don't even have to interview well. I mean, you could just say, here's my degree.
Wow.
What can you do for me? How good is your coffee selection at the, exactly, the coffee bar?
Well, I know you guys also just went through a round of funding, which I hope to do another podcast on specifically with you. I think that would be a fantastic topic.
It was an amazing learning experience. And when I say amazing, I mean good and bad. But I think that that's just the reality. At the end of the day, it takes cash to start businesses. But there's a lot of different ways that people can think about capital.
Yeah.
Cash.
Yeah.
Again, the media loves to cover these venture-backed companies, but it still represents such a small sliver of entrepreneurs. Most businesses are still being funded by the founders.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining me today, man.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Great conversation. We'll definitely do a follow-up one if you'll take the time.
Of course.
Fantastic.
All right. Thank you.
Good stuff. Thanks, Nabil. Once again, thanks so much for joining us today. That was Nabil Aidoud from Insurance Menu, offering some great insights for entrepreneurs out there. If you ever have any questions for myself or our guest, you can always email me at info@workspacema.com. Thanks again, and I'll see you on the next one.